So,
well,
good. Okay,
so mine's got horns.
Hey.
Yours has staff.
Hey.
You've got
Kurt. We're going to talk about how much we rely on technology and how much we depend on it and understand it. So the idea of oxygen tech versus opaque tech. Hello, how's it going?
So, yeah, we're all shared on there. Yeah, you're in the right place.
I am Willow, and if
there's a chair.
We can
the idea.
Chair.
Go around and introduce ourselves because we're both recording this and also for the sake of everybody. If you want to throw anything in about why you like transhumanism, feel up to it as long as you don't take too long. Go!
I am Ben, and I like transhumanism because I am not Willow.
That was all said.
Very good.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yep.
Cameron.
Chris, and I want to live forever.
I'm Morgan, and I want to live longer than him.
I'm Nick McCoy, and I want to have computers in my head.
I'm David, and I want to die at a rational time.
I'm Rob, and I'm researching a creative writing project.
I'm Libby, and Willow made me do it.
I'm Nathan, and I'm a deeply, deeply flawed individual.
I'm Kristen, and they made me do it.
I'm Cody, and I want to interact with electronics with nothing but my mind, no wires.
I'm Stobat, and one day I want to be able to fly. Just me. Just not like a machine.
Okay, so I didn't really do a whole lot of research on this. Honestly, my parents were in town, so I had time for nothing. But I think that based on discussions that Libby and I have had, specifically with Gregory Rollins in the past, is we have this idea of using technology now that we don't necessarily understand. And Theo and I and other people were kind of debating how much you can really understand anything around you. But we definitely depend on, if my trio breaks, I have no idea how to fix it. I don't understand. I understand the theory of how it works, but not the actualities of how it works. I could break it open if it breaks and try to solder it and reprogram it, but I would probably fail. And so I think there's a sense of anxiety or a theory of anxiety based on using things that you don't understand. We'll start there. Anybody?
I have a friend who's not very good with computers, and whenever I try to explain something to him, he doesn't want to know doesn't want to understand how it works, just wants to know what he needs to do to get his job done.
Destination versus the journey.
Oh.
Yeah, I think the guy who first hammered or bumped a seal or whatever, you know, in prehistoric times didn't really know how a club worked and the molecular dynamics behind the club. But, I mean, as tool makers, I think, or tool users, I don't think we need to know exactly how they work.
I think it's also become more of an issue as we've started to use fairly simple tools to design more complex tools.
I think that it's in structuring a tool use argument, you have to think about the most basic interface being the hand, and anything that you put into the hand is another layer of interface. So tools that make tools that make tools is that many steps of interface that we have between an actual act of doing and our experience of that. And so every layer of interface you put in creates another layer of deferral of understanding of what you're doing. So I think that's where the difference between a basic tool and sophisticated interfaces comes in. You're not doing it anymore, the tool's doing it.
Then again, if you do something with your hands, you don't necessarily have to know how your hand works.
Well, but
I mean, the biology.
Well, you have to have a certain amount of knowledge in the sense that, I mean, your knowledge of your hand is like way smarter and way more than an AI system that controls a hand, because, I mean, the human brain is incredibly complex just to be able to get all of the subtlety of movement in a hand. I mean, maybe you don't have like a textbook understanding, but what you have is actually so much more than that.
Are we talking a conscious or a subconscious knowledge of how the hand works?
Subconscious.
Because there are many tools that I use them, and I use them so often, such as even just driving a car, where I don't have to think about it anymore. So even that approaches, or playing a musical instrument, that approaches subconscious knowledge too. So that's an important distinction, I think.
Okay, well then let's go into off the example of driving a car when you know your car really well, and you love your car, and it's my car, that's okay. And you can park, you almost have that zen driving sense where you're like, I'm going to cross lanes now even though I can't see anything. And you get that sense of when you're parallel parking where the end of the car is and you can almost feel it or at least sense it in a very clear way. And so when I text, I can hold a conversation with someone and be texting over here. And not only am I holding two conversations in my head, but I'm moving my fingers and I'm talking to you.
I'm chewing bubble gum.
And chewing bubble
gum. And walking down the street.
And hopping on one foot.
Yes.
Carrying your brother on your back.
Yes, huh? Exactly. And so if you are using these tools as an extension of yourself, Donna Haraway had the whole idea of that being what a cyborg is. I disagree with that. But how are we implementing our tools?
Do you know what I mean when I say Bayesian inference?
No.
Vaguely.
I guess there's Bayesian stuff is sort of a branch of mathematics, and it's all about sort of based on inputs, you predict outputs.
Okay.
The reason that I bring that up is because, I think that's how in general people interact with things in their everyday life. So if something is reliable, right, then the Bayesian inference is solid, right? So you don't really have to know how your car works if it's reliable. You just have to know how
to get the result.
Doing the steering the wheel and pushing the pedals makes the car actually like turn. It's only when the reliability breaks down that I think you really are concerned with the deeper level.
But the fact is that reliability will always break down. Every machine breaks.
Always does.
Certainly.
Always does. And in humans and in machines, always does.
All well-designed systems are constantly in a state of failure, just how well they compensate for it.
And they need to be maintained.
You can't redesign things without failures in the first place, without flaws to overcome, no reason to do it.
When I first got into transhumanism and futurist stuff, not in the sense of the art movement, but in the sense of the transhumanist cyberpunk stuff, there's this idea of the future will be shiny and everything will work. And I think people who have been in this line of thought for more than just the passing fancy start to realize that that's not the case. We can never rely on that. And the idea of that even uploading puts some people off because you don't know how fail-safe it's going to be. And how can you rely on something if you don't know how it works? How can you rely on something if you cannot fix it?
Yeah, our bodies are pretty vulnerable too, though. I mean, like, yeah. We have so many diseases, you name it. I think compared to computers, we're just as unreliable, really.
Yeah.
Right, but there is inherently within your body all of the information and data necessary for it to heal itself.
Yeah, you have techs who go and fix bodies.
Well, right, but we didn't have those until, like, just the last couple few hundred years.
No, we don't have the full amount to have the body completely repair itself. We can take care of minor injury. If you break a femur, your body probably is not going to successfully repair itself.
Well, it won't set the bone, but if you set it, then it can repair itself.
Well,
but
it will heal.
It will
be stronger.
It will repair itself, it just won't repair itself well. It will repair itself in, like, awkward fashion.
That's assuming it doesn't fail in the process. I mean, the body keeps failing. It can
breaking
fix lots
breaking.
Of simple stuff, but nothing really complex.
Taking as a granted that all systems break down, be it people, technologies, or sociological structures, I think that's where the conversation about do you know how well this stuff works really becomes important, because a doctor can heal a body, and we need physicians to heal bodies. So how is it that everybody's running around not knowing how their technology works? Because if we don't understand how our technology works, how can we heal it when it breaks?
Oh, and just also taking that as an analogy to social structures, you can look at a government like we have. Ideally, a society like ours will fix itself if it breaks. Ideally.
It goes into sustainability politics.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Ideally, communism works. Look at Starfleet.
Well, any political system of government, any system of government is idealistic in saying it'll fix itself.
Can I say something about the doctor analogy? There's, it's an interesting analogy, but I'm not sure it really works for saying that you need doctors to fix things because, or that doctors themselves have this perfect knowledge, because doctors themselves, I mean, the vast majority of medicine that they practice is really mystery to them. I mean, you know, they'll say that, you know, SSRIs work in a certain way, but there's no actual full documentation that medicines work the way they do, that we don't necessarily understand the mechanisms. We can only look at the results and hope that the results continue.
Especially when we use it.
I wasn't arguing that doctors know what they're doing.
I was just arguing against that.
And anyway, not everyone's a doctor. We go and seek out experts if we need to fix our bodies.
Well, that doesn't mean they're necessarily experts either. They had a vaccine in Japan that was causing the disease that it was trying to prevent.
I'm talking theoretically.
Well, yeah, I'm saying.
But speaking practically, without those kinds of experts, folk medicine has been practiced for thousands of years and it's kept the species alive. And that's in a culture that didn't necessarily have it. Experts. Now we're dependent on those experts, but they can't really do the job.
They were the experts at the time.
There were experts.
But it was a much more broadly disseminated information base.
Well, yes. Yeah, but folk medics still had a lot of the key course to what is medicine today. I mean, folk medicine is where we got like aspirin compounds and that kind of thing. People use plants to.
Okay, going off this idea.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. To get back to the idea is.
Relevancy rocks.
using that to go towards open source software. People that all contribute towards a wider base of knowledge in constructing one thing that everybody can use rather than a team of experts creating software that's closed source that no one can look at, and then when it breaks down we have to run to the same people that sold it to us to pay them to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's wholly inefficient too, because that requires you have like six or eight other whole departments for encrypting all the software and making sure that regular people can't open it up in a text editor and change this line of code and recompile it.
And they all don't necessarily communicate well, sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah, it's fine.
I would just like to make a comment that I think is apropos to the previous discussion as well. And I think that when you talk about sort of the dissemination of information, it's really an economic issue. That is, if you look at the cost of storing information and disseminating it, right? I mean, it's decreased dramatically from just like human memory to books to, magnetic media, I guess, is the current state of the art. And then, of course, from transmission, from using your voice or perhaps a fire to, again, books and mail systems to the internet.
No.
I mean, makes it much more worthwhile to know how to look things up than to actually know them, simply because the amount of information that's out there is expanding.
Exponentially.
Presumably.
Right, yeah, humans have limited capacity, so. It does make sense, I think, to specialize. Even in economics, you can show that like it's better for to be importing and exporting and have different countries specialize, and you get overall more goods produced that way.
It's more efficient. It's easier to capitalize on things, but I don't know that it's the best route.
It's the quantity versus quality argument. Do you want to produce a lot of it? Does China want to make sure that they can sell 85 million things to us? Or do we want to be able to sell 10 million things to everybody that will work until they're 60?
I would also argue that by specializing, they're able to make something of a higher quality. There's the argument that, Heinlein or something, specialization is for insights. And while I disagree with that, I think that specialization is important. There's also a need for general understanding of a lot of the things that you use. And when you talk about when Rob talks about his friend not wanting to know how a computer program works, I just want to know how to make it do what I want to do. We're forgetting that there's all this other stuff that goes into it. And basically, what if the system breaks down? How do we recover if we don't understand it?
So, I guess the question is, how deep down the rabbit hole do you really want to go, right? Because, so, just taking your example of a computer system, right? Like, at the very top level, you've got your basic user interface. And then below that, you've kind of got, like, guts, which are, like, libraries and other software. And the very bottom layer of the software, you've kind of got the operating system, which is interfaced with wetware. And I mean, you can keep on going down until you hit quantum mechanics. And I mean, you know, eventually you have to stop somewhere because you can't do it all.
I think we can also look at it just as like a bandwidth problem, kind of like what you're saying. So say you wanted to have this system with all these sensors. The sensors could be people, you know, and this could be a system where it's a government or a society or whatever. But, you know, each sensor is going to have its own view of its local vicinity, you know, just like, and so, you know, if I'm over here, it's going to take time to transmit that information over here. And so, really, by nature of the world, people specialize in their local environment. So I think that analogy actually does to other systems, to larger systems.
I think there's something to be said for looking at systems within systems. If we're talking about the individual human body failing, absolutely, it's doing that, but yet we've still experienced and made our way to where we are today as a species on the basis of natural selection. So while we have individual bodies failing, ideally we'd like to think that there's been some change that's occurred with the bodies. The same thing with computer systems, or data systems, or informational systems. The individual ones may have failures that are taking place or that are built in, but we've still experienced, from a wider perspective, a systemic increase in what our abilities are, and including our ability to decrease, ideally, the failure rate of said systems.
Related to that, because not everything is failing at once, if it did, we'd just be screwed.
Right.
There are always going to be more people using a system than there will be systems that need people fixing a system, or there should be, theoretically, because you'll have more systems being used than those that are broken at any point in time. So you don't need everybody to know how to fix their system. You need a small specialty subset. So specialization works great here. To use the example of doctors again, presuming that they know what they're doing, and auto mechanics, once again, presuming that they know what they're doing. A doctor, when his car breaks, takes it to the auto mechanic. An auto mechanic, when he gets sick, he takes his body to the doctor. They've each specialized, because they each have the deep knowledge needed to fix that system, but they've got the general knowledge they need to use the other, and I think that's an important distinction.
But the cultural problem with dissemination that we're seeing pandemically is that there are more and more places where there is no doctor and there is no mechanic, because specialization has taken its toll in such a way and has gone in such an unnatural direction. People have become so highly specialized, and the dissemination of certain specializations has been so economic based. There are large parts of the world where people do not have access to skills that in a pre-globalized society, and I don't want to open up the globalization campus, but I had to say it, would have access to those specializations because they were not specialized knowledge the way we conceive of it. And in pre-oxygen tech, that was a commonplace.
Can you just give a quick example?
I'm biased because of my own profession, but I'm a metal worker. That means I am a blacksmith, I'm a fabricator, I know how to build fires, I'm a carpenter, I'm a mechanic and a machinist. I have to know how every level of what I do works, because if it breaks, there are not a lot of blacksmiths around to fix things. I have to know how my whole system works, and failing to understand any step of it means I fail to understand what I'm doing.
And what's the first things they teach you in blacksmithing?
How to build a forge.
How to build a forge, and how to build your own tools. And then how to smelt the iron and make your iron yourself. How to make your own tools, how to create your own technologies.
Chris, can you build a plane?
No. And I'm not arguing that I can, but what I'm saying is that when there's too much specialization, when a system breaks down, if the dissemination of knowledge is not broad enough, then nothing can be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what happens is people like, who I think maybe gathered around this table, tend to arise, which is to say, we become tinkerers. The drive to understand how the machine works starts to rise, and I think we've definitely noticed that in the past 10 years, a rise of that in our culture as a large, that a lot of us are scratching our heads, looking at a lot of the machinery, and are like, well, how does this work? What level of understanding do I need to have of how much this works for me to mod it and tinker it?
Well, and I think it's beyond just curiosity, it goes toward fear. I mean, think about, how bad you feel when your laptop breaks and you look at it and it looks the same way it did the day before. It just has no backlit screen. It doesn't smell like something's burning. You don't see a gear that's rolled out sitting on the floor.
The blue smoke got out and I can't get it back in.
Yeah, you sit there and you feel helpless. And I think that part of the reason why our culture is starting to be populated with people who are tinkerers is not just, oh, this is shiny and I want to figure out how it works, but it's those of us who have had massive hard drive crashes, have lost projects the night before they were due, have learned what it's like to get stuck in a situation where your technology fails you. And I'm not even talking your computer technology. You know, I think about, there are lots of different types of tech. You know, and I think that's part of the reason, actually, I'm going to use the S word, why steampunk is so popular. And it's not just because it's shiny. All right, a lot of it's because it's shiny. But some of the reason why we got into it, those of us who are into it, is because oxygen tech is scary. Rounded edges on all products made of white, hard plastic are frightening. iPods scare the living shit out of me. Why? Because if it breaks, I have to throw it away. I can't do anything to it. I can't make it better for myself. I could stick some stuff on the outside of it.
It's closed tech.
Yeah, it's closed tech. And I think that's frightening for a lot of us, especially those of us who believe that we are in the midst of huge amounts of change within our society. I'm not gonna use the A word apocalypse, but
Stop it.
But yeah, the zombies are coming and you're fucked. So, you know.
Specialization has just become its own form of currency.
Yeah.
You know something, you don't give it in exchange for the knowledge, it becomes currency. It's not about giving and exchanging. That's why it's.
We don't barter anymore.
There is no bartering anymore.
Sure there is.
There's not enough.
Well, and here, talking about that society of makers and people that barter and whatever kind of subversive behaviors you want to put on it, I think it's important to recognize that while that culture is growing, the rate at which technology is becoming more opaque and indecipherable is growing exponentially faster than the interest in being a maker, being a tinkerer. So yes, we do see that reaction. But I personally think that it's profoundly dangerous, the rate at which our technologies, and not just our technologies, but social interfaces, it's not people's computers they don't understand, it's their agricultural system, their economic system, the workings of their government, and our hand-use technology reflects this as well. It's an acceptance that culture has of not understanding how their environs operate. And that's dangerous.
It can be summed up pretty quick by thinking to yourself, just as a quick thought problem, what would happen if there all of a sudden were no more power plants and there was nothing generating electricity and all of the batteries and everybody's stuff went dead?
I think this
there's
is
no
part
way to power it, no way to charge it. Where do you go from there?
I built a steam engine last week.
I know how to cook rabbit.
I know how to kill rabbit.
You can make a good team.
I'm a real nice guy and a friend to everyone.
When the apocalypse comes, I want everybody at the table on my side.
Does anybody know that there are ways you can plug your laptop into a tree?
You can plug it into the tree.
But there's not a whole lot of output when there's no power.
Well, that depends. I had to buy this thing, my pets chewed through my laptop cord, so I had to go buy a new one. Of course, they didn't want to let me have just the one with the cord in it. They wanted to give me the car attachment. So I bitched because I don't have a car. But now I've got this car attachment. I can plug it into a 12-volt lighter socket, and it'll power my laptop. So now I know also how to plug things into the ground and get 12 volts out of it. and run it through this little power supply.
There are
going to
be bigger issues, though, if you don't have electricity.
Well, the point is to show the dependence on the technology. What happens when you don't have a TV, when you don't have a radio, when you don't have any way to communicate with people?
No interwebs.
You don't have no interwebs.
Nose! You have something to say. Oh,
nose. Surely
not. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I want to challenge you on what you said. Like, I'm not entirely convinced that's true, right? Like, if you look at the surveillance society, right? Like, everyone was really scared of, and I'm rightfully so, right? Surveillance society is scary. But, I mean, if you look at how it actually turned out, I mean, okay, sure, in London, like, the cops know what everything happens everywhere because, like, every place is surveilled. But people have started surveying their government as well as their government. Yes, surveilling them. And there's been a lot of interesting things that have come out of that. I mean, there's been a lot of sort of, how can I put it? People have forced government officials to be responsible where they otherwise wouldn't have been because...
Where you videotape cops.
Yeah.
Busting
or, for example, if you look at the cutting edge of technology, right? Like all this cloud computing and stuff, like that's all based on open source software because closed source software is simply not flexible enough. To innovate at the rapid rate that's on the cutting edge. And part of it's due to licensing concerns. I mean, I'm not going to say that closed things can't ever be quick, but I mean, that's just the way it turned out, at least this round.
2 points off of that, one being when we ask people to specialize to a certain degree, our politicians are specialized because we don't want to have to deal with all that. And so when you ask people to run something for you and specialize in running it for you, there's a degree of corruption that you have to accept with that. And so far, the Geek Society has been great, I think a lot because of the background that they had before the boon of actually being worth something instead of just socially accepted and wanted, as opposed to the kid that plays Diablo in your basement, which I was in high school, you know, and so you have that degree of potential for corruption when you're relying on someone to run something for you. And also,
and it's vice versa too, because they trust you to fix their computer, and you know, I've hacked into a lot of people's computers that I was supposed to fix. So.
Yeah.
So what's your name again?
I just want to make sure. Okay, we're never going to fix their computers.
And also, when you talk about the ability to use open source software, which I really enjoy the idea of, and modding it encourages you to understand it, at least to a degree. So, to repeat your question back to you, how far down the rabbit hole do you think we should be going? Like, what is a good level of understanding, or is that an individual thing that we can figure out?
I think it's a very, very individual thing. There are places where, you know, there's some places, especially in crypto, where I go very far down the rabbit hole. I need to. I was doing bit twiddling a few days ago because it was necessary. The other places where I go and I look at software, you know, it's not obvious. I go and, you know, I click the copy paste button at the top of the application and don't worry about anything lower than that. It's, you know, I pick where I want to specialize, where I'm a user, and where I'm somewhere in between. And I think that it's definitely an individual thing. You just need to have enough people seated around who can do different things.
It brings up the question between like competition and community or collective. If we've got too many people trying to work in secret and trying to be better than everybody else to try and push them out, then that's going to be a lot less effective than if we all work together and keep putting in everybody's input, which will then trigger everybody else. It's like I said in one of the earlier meetings, if I don't have input from other people, I can't figure things out any further than my brain allows them to.
Socialist.
It depends on other people's input. It depends on other people's mistakes and other people's idiosyncrasies and other people's neuroses a lot of times to get my head to twist the words in the proper way to where they make better sense. And so it's the same thing with the software. I might look at something and be like, I need this button here, and I'll sit in and I'll try and fix that button, and I just don't have the experience to do it. But I can go down the street and be like, hey, help me with this. And they'll know it too, because we've all been working to try and learn that. In the military, we all have to know exactly the same knowledge in exactly the same situation so that we know that if we're all in a combat situation, we're not all going to die because we all know what to do in each situation. And it's definitely a point of if everybody would get together and work together on it, then we'd get much better software out of it. Like, I was a big fan of CorelDRAW for a long time, which is definitely closed source, and it's an amazing program. I've just been screwing around with the GIMP lately, and it puts it to shame. And GIMP is open source. I can open it up and I can change it myself if I want to. And it just, in the beginning, it's going to be buggy, it's going to be slow, it's going to be difficult to get into, it's going to be difficult to get people to make the transition from what's familiar to what's new. But once it gets rolling and once it picks up steam, once it picks up steam and once everybody finds out how much less time, energy, and overhead will go into it, then they'll start getting on the bandwagon.
I really like the analogy that like software really is a political process, though. I mean, it's like you elect politicians to write your government code, you pay software developers to write your software code. I mean, I think there is a strong analogy there. I forget where I was going with it.
But I think something else you point out, I'm sure it's, you know, keeps reappearing, is the idea that, you know, with the GIMP, which as far as I'm concerned isn't quite where I need it to be yet, I keep waiting on it to finally get where I need so I can get rid of my expensive stuff. But the thing is that sooner or later, if it's done properly, you don't need to have a separation between, I know it as transparent technology, oxygen technology, whatever, and open technology. You can have it, especially in software, be the same thing. And I think that, you know, no, there's nothing wrong with it being all hard white plastic and smooth curvy edges, even if that isn't entirely my style, so long as I can still, if I want to, take out my screwdriver, pop it open, and, you know, muck around on the inside. And that, to me, is what I really care about. I want my technology to be invisible most of the time, or to contribute stylistically, so long as I can go and fix it.
But being able to mod it is what makes it invisible. I would argue that, because anything that you don't like that makes it more difficult to use, if you can change that, if you understand how to change it and make it easier to use for you, you're making it more invisible.
It sounds like you want to support democracy. There needs to be a way to vote for features, lobby software developers for...
I'm a socialist.
Well, you do that with wallet.
Democracy works.
Well, yeah, it's not like everybody's going to Congress and, you know,
democracy,
in on
three wolves and one sheep, voting on what's for lunch.
Well, I think that analogy that you just said was really elegant about software operating like government. You know, we elect our politicians to organize our government. We choose our software developers to organize our technology. I think the same problem arises in both of them, in that our political systems have become completely opaque and the layman can no longer directly participate in them nor modify their political system if they don't like the way it's working, because it's been taken over by specialists and we no longer have the option to take it back from them. The same can be said of any technology that becomes opaque to the layman.
Because we obviously don't have the technology or the information necessary to handle it if it breaks.
At some point, we don't even have the frame of reference to conceive of how it could have worked in the first place.
Dude, we are so screwed. Like
example, democracy.
Yeah.
I've seen lots of software like that, personally.
Yeah. The Constitution in its original form. See if it makes sense.
You also end up having people programming things. Okay, so I work in a law office. We have new fancy copiers with little Equitrack things that are supposed to, you know, you put in all the information, it keeps track of what client and matter number it goes with, and, you know, you go through all these processes. The thing is, all this code was written by software engineers. It was not written by secretaries who have to use it. And so because I'm kind of the go-between for them, when they go, where the fuck is the button? Like, oh, it's right under file, of course. Why would it be under file? It makes sense to a software geek, but not to the people that it was being written for. And I think this happens a lot in offices, where the people that are using it are not in the same headspace as the people who created it.